Welcome to episode 117 of the Linux Lugcast. We are an open podcast slash lug that meets at 9 p.m. Eastern every first and third Friday of the month using Mumble. If you'd like to join us, all you need to do is install a Mumble client on your computer or mobile device, go into linuxlugcast.com to get the server details, then join us in the Linux Lugcast room. If you do not want to participate, just listen, and just listen, you can connect to the Mumble server, go into the listening booth. Just a separate room right off of the Linux Lugcast room. If you need any help configuring your Mumble client, there is a how-to on the on our site explaining how to configure the desktop client. If you have any questions, comments, or topics you'd like us to discuss and are unable to join us during the live show, you can send us feedback at linuxlugcast.com. We also still have a G+ community site for as long as G+ is available, a MeWe page, which I didn't put the link back in, but I will. And we are still on IRC on Freenode pound Linux Lugcast. I am your host this evening, Honky Magoo. With me tonight is 5150.
Howdy, folks.
Joe.
Hello, hello.
And Netminer.
Hello, friends.
So our one feedback was from Richard Klein in G+. So they directed at 5150 saying that there was an article about Kansas is sitting on $10 million in unused computer hardware.
Yeah, I looked at the article. What it is, it's at one point in 2016 or four, they took delivery in 2016. State of Kansas was setting up to do all their own central backup. And then at some point during the year or a year later, before any of it was installed, they looked and said, yeah, we could do cloud hosting cheap, and they decided to go that way. So, you know, they've got all this software that's been sitting there for two or a little more years, you know, never opened up, never installed. Of course, this would all be server software. And they're looking to sell it at, you know, the article at least, you know, I'll monitor it, see if I can find a link. But so far they were wanting one of the universities to help them with selling the hardware. But there's, you know, there's no link in the article. Here's where you can bid or whatever. Now, I really rather suspect that you know, this is all going to be sold by the pallet. It's not like you're going to be able to buy an individual server and go up there to Pika and pick it up. And I'm not sure, you know, whatever savings you would have would be worth the gas for me to drive to Topeka anyway. So, you know, I think when Richard mentioned this, that it was a little bit tongue in cheek, aiming it towards me. Like I said, I rather think that they're looking at bids from either resellers or, you know, enterprise customers who are going to buy more than one system at once. And I'm certain these are enterprise level servers, so it's probably nothing I could do anything with anyway, even if they would sell me just one. But I'll see if I can find a link where they are being sold. Like I've told the story before on a much smaller basis. School I worked for, they retired their Pentium 4 workstations and then left them sitting in the back room for 2 years. And they went, you know, I said, well, what can we sell these for? I said, yeah, maybe $100. You know, I told them if I was you guys, I would just, for no more than what these things are worth, I would just give them away to the faculty. And then they sat there for 2 years, and then they asked, you know, what they're worth. And I said, you know, they probably aren't. You know, you can buy a Raspberry Pi that will do everything this machine will do now. You can, you know, the average, you know, the any new machine you buy is going to be dual core at least. You know, I told them you really missed your opportunity to sell these. I think they eventually did sell all the ones that still had an operating system for $25 a piece. If I'd been there, I would have told people, no. Well, they might have been worth that much, but I mean, they were XP, and XP had, you know, another year to go maybe at that time, maybe two. with updates. I wouldn't really have encouraged somebody that much to buy one. Though all I'd wiped all the teachers' machines, they all came back to me, and they were sitting on my back porch, and I was going to use them, enclosed back porch, and I was going to use them, where you hook all the computers together as one. Of course, it would have been a ridiculous waste of energy compared to doing it with Pis. You know, like a Beowulf cluster or something like that. Yes. So, I was going to hook them all up in a cluster and see what I came up with just for one time. You know, of course, it probably would have blown the breaker getting them all going. Of course, all those got melted in the fire anyway. Yeah, if I can find where they're auctioning them off, I'll post a link. But I doubt if it's going to be anything of interest to an individual.
Hey, servers are fun to play with, even if you don't have any use for them.
Well, I've got an old one. Of course, I had it in the outbuilding, you know, because you fire it up, it's, sound like 747. At the time, I was kind of under illusion, actually learn how to use a server, you have to have rack-mounted server hardware, which is, of course, not at all the case.
Right, all my servers are Pis.
Well, that's what I did. See, this thing, it didn't come with the SCSI drives. It was just bare bones, Pacific Computing, something like that. I don't think they're still in business, but I'm sure you can find a similar place that sells, use servers, and of course they only sell them with one power supply, where they would usually have, they would usually have a backup, but no drives. And if you go on there to get the SCSI drivers, the server's $100, but the drives for not very big ones are $500. So I just plugged, it had USB, so I just plugged in my external USB drives that I had laying around for storage. And then, when I built my Pi server, I just consolidated the contents of those two drives to one, 5 gig external drive, and that's what I still have. Well, I'd thrown the HPR New Year's Eve show into the show topics, but I think we covered that all pretty well in the pre-show.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, we had some good conversations.
Definitely.
Yeah, any ETA honky on when you think you might get the first episode up on HPR? Oh, everybody, people didn't participate can listen to it if they're not aware of what. I can't imagine anybody listening really isn't aware of what the HPR New Year's Eve show is by now. But if you're unfamiliar with it, then they'll be coming up in the rotation.
No current ETA. Like I said, I just yesterday downloaded them all. My recordings was not good, so K-Wisher had some recordings, so I grabbed his, and I just right before the beginning of the show had took the first one. Truncated silence, and that's all I've done so far.
Do you know roughly how many posts you're going to make?
It's already cut up into, like I said, there's 10 parts. It's already cut up into, so it might just be 10, or I might try to, depending on the sizes, after I truncate silence, how big each one is, I might combine a few. I don't know.
And for the listeners, one of the things we've done, or HPR has done differently, I haven't really participated that much in, either the production or the post-production the last few years, but one of the things that's changed on HPR, instead of saying, starting a week after New Year's, we are going to set aside X amount of slots for the New Year's show. It's pretty much going to be, as Honky gets them done, and then You know, if the next available slot is 20 days down the road or 60 days down the road or whatever, you know, at putting them in as there are slots available, and they're probably going to be non-contiguous, both so people don't get, you know, tired of listening to one after another, and just as, you know, again, as slots are available.
Is that how they do it? Just slot availability, or people record and then when a slot becomes available, it gets posted?
Well, when you post it to HBR, you basically choose a slot on a calendar as to when you want it, and you can reserve a slot. But it's pretty much just you choose on the calendar where you want it. Like, if I get it all done right now, when I wanted it on like every Thursday for like the next however long it's going to be, like a month or so, I could set that up as long as nobody else has already taken those slots.
Okay, so I know with like every HPR recording, they tell you somewhat how you can do it. Can you go through the whole posting to Hacker Public Radio?
Sure. It's been a little while, but basically you go to... You know what? Let me bring up the Hacker Public Radio page.
Well, the first step is you go to the calendar page, or, you know, upload shows page, and you find a slot. And if there's, you know, slots been taken, there will be a name of the show and number of the show on there. Sometimes you'll see them pending. You know, they've been uploaded or in the process of uploading, and all they really do is check to see if the audio is intelligible. They don't check to see, you know, they don't make a judgment on content usually. You know, is this going to offend someone? Usually that's not part of the process. When that's done, it'll show up, you know, then it'll show up, but it's not like you can steal that slot while it's pending. So you scroll down and you'll find an empty slot and click on it. And, it'll say, okay, we'll email you back for confirmation. That's to make sure you're not a scammer. So you put in your email, a few minutes, it'll email you back. Then that gives you a link to where you upload the show, and, you know, like a web page, and you can go in, put in your show notes. I still don't understand markup languages, so I usually just do my show notes in text. You're actually encouraged to do them in markup, but usually that's just, you know, the whole thing's a form, and like, so your show notes is a, you know, it is a big open tab on the open box on the form to paste your show notes, and then there's various tick boxes that are like, is the show safe for work or not? Is this part of a series, and if so, what series? So definitely would be, in Honky's case, uploading the New Year's Eve show. You need to have at least, or be planning 3 episodes for it to be a series. You know, 3 episodes on a similar topic. And of course, show title, author. You know, if you're a new author, you know, then you go through that. But if you're already listed, I think it's just like a drop down. Various other things are pretty much self-explanatory, and you know, then you upload the show, and one of them, you know, I think there's like 3 options. One of them is already out there on the internet someplace. Post a link. If you're uploading from your hard drive, you know, you click on that, and you know, you browse to where the file is on your hard drive. And I think there's another option. I think maybe had to do with the old phone-in system. But You know, it's not a very, it's a lot more streamlined process than it used to be. You know, used to be you posted it on the FTP, and then I think emailed admin, say, hey, I've posted a new show. And I don't know. Now, I don't know. Sometimes I used to include pictures and whatnot when we were doing it on the FTP. So I imagine now, I haven't really done it, but pictures for a while, but maybe if you, there's only space on the forum to upload one file, so maybe if you did the whole thing as a zip, that I'm sure that would get worked out too, because that would just go to the admin, and then, you know, and then they would, you know, unzip the compressed file and separate out the files. So, Honky, have I left much anything out?
No, I think you're doing fine. Only to say that there's an opening spot, an available spot at 116, if somebody wanted to do a show.
Okay, yeah, I was just curious about the overall process.
I mean, it really, they've got it to be where it almost couldn't be easier.
And yet, every single time, I think I screw up the show notes. Poor Dave.
Yeah, and I'm looking at the webpage right now. And, you know, because sometimes you'll see portions of shows in the RSS feed. And I guess you can get RSS feeds to specific portions. Like, what was it? I saw Bash scripting episode 17 or something today. But I didn't want to start it, like, in the middle. So it's good that I can go in and find the specific series RSS.
Yeah, they have a couple of those things set up where you can get specific series. I want to say there's one where you can download like all of them. I think there was one where you download all of them. Yeah,
that's what I'm seeing, where you can go in and grab the specific RSS for just that feed. And if you can get the RSS, you can get everything from it. So I'll be grabbing that stuff on probably Bash and Sed and whatever else I can find.
Yeah, what was it? Well, I can look back at HPR and find it, because there was something we were talking about, and us here in the room, that you know, on the New Year's Eve show, and it was like, then we talked about HPR and looked at HPR. Well, there's a show on it 2 or 3 days.
Oh, he was talking about. I thought it was Ken talking about YouTube RSS feeds, because they changed how they do the RSS feeds, and I wasn't able to find it anymore, so I had to find a bunch of workarounds. And then, you know, they got that show there on how you can still pull the RSS feeds and use them, and it might work in various podcatchers. So I'm definitely going to try it out.
Okay, but that's the very latest show.
Yeah, I did see that. I do have it downloaded. I just haven't listened to it yet.
Well, no, there's another one. Taj did one 2 or 3 days back. Really simple YouTube.
Yeah, okay. I remember seeing that one, too.
I'm thinking it was ONAP. Were we talking about ONAP? You
know, no, I don't remember that.
No, I know what it was. We were talking about briefly about the Raspberry Pi 3A Plus.
Right.
And I linked, okay, there was a review of it about a week ago by Yannick.
Right, I did see that one. And I don't know, in that review he was talking about it kind of taking over for the Zero, and I don't know if that's exactly the use case for it, because the Zero is even smaller and costs less, so...
Right, but I can't see a use case of it taking over for the... 3B either, because
it seems to be that nice bridge between the two, because it's got more hardware right. specs than the Zero, but less than the 3B.
Yeah, I mean, one of the examples I gave, and this was on this show several weeks ago, that when we talked about it, I said, you know, well, if you want to put the gaming hardware in the controller, that bit, you know, which we've seen with the Zero. If you could fit one of these, then you're, you know, you can fit in a lot more powerful computer. If you've only got room for a Zero, then that's, you know, for an embedded system, that's the way you have to go. If you've got twice as much room, then you could do the 3A, as long, you know, long as you don't need as many outputs. You know, and then, you know, if size really is not the object, if, you know, if you're not trying to stick it inside a device, you're just putting it in a case sitting on your desk, then, you know, there's absolutely no reason to buy this instead of the 3B.
Yeah, I agree with you completely.
Now, that link you put in, is that to the thing you're trying to mount to the back of a dresser?
Oh, it's one of the things that I have mounted to the back of the dresser. Well, right now it's actually in my garage sitting with my set-top box out there, since that doesn't have very many ports. But it was here on my laptop stand. I had originally tried to Velcro it, but it just wouldn't stay, so I switched to the metal plumber's tape.
Now, you won't find them in Walmart for some of the stuff like the Raspberry Pis. Oh, wow. Yeah, that is looks big and heavy. if you, you know, I have been able to go to the local hardware store and find screws small enough to go through the mounting holes on like a Raspberry Pi or an Orange Pi, and just mount them to the plywood board that the contractor we built the house built next to the junction box and the, you know, and my networking setup and all that. But you're not going to find screws that small in Walmart, I don't think. Not in my Walmart, at least. Now, that does not look like your normal docking station, Joe. And if you want to, you can put that link in the show notes for people to look at. But do you connect that just by cables?
Yeah, that's just a USB 3.0 cable. The large one. I'm not even sure what you call it. The full size.
Yeah, I think it's either A or B or whatever, but yeah, the standard one, not the mini or micro.
Or anything else. Yeah, full size, but it's also the 3.0 one, which makes it larger than the 2.0 one.
So is that the major difference, that all the USB strips out there that we're used to, powered and unpowered, are all just going to be 2.0?
The older ones, yeah. The 3.0 ones have like this extra notch in the top. So you can still use a 2.0 cable with them. It just won't be as fast. It'll be at 2.0 speeds.
And that's one of the other things we discussed on the New Year's Eve show. I don't know if you guys were there, but it was kind of a lively discussion about USB-C and what it was really good for.
USB-C is good for a lot of things, but there's also so many different variants of USB-C right now that you really need to do your research before you buy anything and try to use it. Just because it has USB-C doesn't mean that it has Thunderbolt capabilities or the full 10 Mbps, which is slower than the Thunderbolt, which I think is like 40 Mbps.
Well, it's like my Chromebook, which is an Intel Chromebook, and it's got two USB-C. They would add plenty of room to put USB 3.0 or 2.0 down, you know, but one of them has to be for power, you know, anyway. So then you're down to one USB.
You can't get one of those adapters that allows you to power it and add crap.
I hadn't thought of that. I may have to look into that. You know, right now I'm using the other one for the mouse. I had gone with a Bluetooth mouse, and at least on Amazon, there only seems to be the one Bluetooth mouse. You know, it worked fine, but it lasted about 8 months and died. And so I looked on Amazon, and it was exactly the same one. Said, well, I don't want to do that again. So I, you know, just used an adapter and then plugged in a regular USB 2.4 gigahertz, you know, really cheap mouse, and that works. So, you know, but yeah, if I needed anything else, that's a good idea. Is, you know, get either plug in a C hub or, you know, or something to allow power and data, because the two, it's not like there's one side that this is only power. You know, well, they're interchangeable.
This is not cheap, but it is the Bluetooth mouse that I have been wanting. No, I do not have one. Kind of wish I did. It is the Logitech MX Ergo Plus wireless trackball mouse, and it'll do dongle or Bluetooth. But it is also trackball, and I'm one of the few people I know that actually likes trackball.
Well, where I'm using it, that would definitely save me room. Oh, okay, so it is both a mouse and a trackball. Yeah, $78, that's not cheap, but, you know, I'll definitely look into it.
I got the M570 for Christmas.
Yeah, I got a whole bunch of the M570s. I go through them. The buttons die on them.
Logitech, okay, well, is definitely a good brand.
I see one for $60 on eBay.
So you say you go through them pretty quickly. Are you sure that this one is going to hold up?
I'm not. But, you know, I also usually pay only $20 for the M570s.
I'm just wondering what...
When I say quick, I mean, yeah, I've got, you know, three of them, and they maybe last a year to 2 years. It's not like the old wired ones that you used to get from Logitech that would last like 5 years.
I think I've just found one of those old wired ones kicking around, too. The old wired one was had the ball in the middle as opposed to
They had one with the ball on the, made for right-handed people.
Right. I'm just saying that the one I found kicking around was one of the ones that I've been in the mail.
No, I don't know if I could get used to that or not, but I've been using the right-handed one for, you know, 10-plus years now in various forms.
Well, I like the combo because, you know, the usual trouble I have with the trackball is that you get exactly on the point you want to click. I mean, you can... But then you click, and then that moves the whole thing, you know, moves your thumb on the trackball, and you click where you didn't want to click. And unless you take your thumb off the trackball, and then that's another movement that takes, you know, another little bit. So, you know, you could get in the general neighborhood and then make a very small movement with the mouse to get to put the pointer exactly where you want it. Ah, and it's Bluetooth and USB-C.
Oh, is it USB-C on that one? Okay. Now, I thought it was the A dongle, the unified receiver that Logitech uses. Do they is the new unified receiver USB-C? I'm betting that is actually an error. Oh, no, maybe it does charging over USB-C.
Yeah, none of the pictures show the cords anywhere, so... Yeah, that's what I'm wondering. If you do have it wired up direct, does that mean you don't have to worry about batteries, or maybe it does charge?
Okay, let me send you another link here that actually shows more. Now, this one is the same model and everything. It's just coming up as $94. And that shows it with the unifying receiver and what looks like a micro cable. Yeah, that looks like a standard dongle for Logitech.
That's what I was going to say. It looks like a tiny barrel connector on one end and a standard USB. Of course, I already have the adapter. It looks like, I don't know, that one looks like there's also a USB wireless adapter.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. That's their standard unifying receiver. Right there is what it looks like. So it would be compatible with all the other unifying receivers out there. And then the other one, yeah, it might look like a barrel, but I think you're just looking at the micro USB from the side.
Okay. Yeah, I'm passing my mouse over it, and it's not expanding.
Yeah, Yeah, I noticed that. Right. Now, there's another one that Logitech also makes called the MX Vertical, which I believe also does Bluetooth. It has all the same functionality. It's just not a trackball, and it's oddly shaped to have your hand in a different position instead of the standard position for a mouse.
Yeah, I've got a few wireless that are like that, too. Yeah, I don't, you know, this last listing doesn't really show any specs.
Yeah. It was just the picture I was after on that one. And there's a link for the MX Vertical. Let me add that to the show notes in case anybody's interested.
Yeah, it is a cool shape. Kind of looks like an onion.
Yep, a little bit.
Yeah, it says wireless and wired, and it doesn't expound on...
Right, it doesn't specifically say...
Okay, now below it does say interface, Bluetooth, and USB-C.
Yep.
Again, we've seen the model says USB-C, and then you look at the picture, and it's not a USB-C connector.
But yeah, I think I picked up one of those Amazon special, like, really low-cost Bluetooth mice that is actually fairly small and portable. And that's what I tend to take to work to use with my tablet. And I've had it for probably 2 years now, but, you know, I only use it for an hour or two a day at most.
So looking at this mouse, maybe I wasn't paying attention, but how in the world do you use it?
Oh, the Ergo one?
Yeah.
Or not the Logitech one, but the other one?
The MX Vertical? Well, it is Logitech.
Okay, the Vertical. Yeah, it's still. Basically, you use it like a regular mouse. It's just your hand is at a, 45-degree angle?
Okay, I thought it was some new funky trackball type where that little side thing, you did something with your thumb or something.
No. It just changes the angle that you hold your wrist, and it's supposed to be better for your arm.
Got it.
And then here is a cheaper one, $14.50, straight out of China. Let me add that to the mumble. And no, I do not know if this is any good or not. But it's supposed to be Bluetooth and vertically oriented.
And I want to say, looking at that picture, you're actually looking at the side of the mouse that would be pointed away from you normally.
Yeah, you're looking at the front of the mouse on that one.
It looks like this one's wired only.
Oh, that one said Bluetooth. Right on it.
You're right. Yeah, okay. You're right. I was looking at connectivity under specs, it says wired, but then you come down below features Bluetooth. Okay.
In the description, before you click on it, it says wireless, ergonomic, Bluetooth, vertical, comfortable, pro gaming mouse. With Bluetooth right in the title, I would assume that it was Bluetooth.
Right. It does also say OS and Linux, so, you know, a lot of times you won't see that on hardware, and most of it's going to be supported anyway.
Right.
But it's nice to actually see that they acknowledge that in the specs. That reminds me of a story I don't think I've told years ago when I was helping the school convert over from Macs to PCs, and you know, secretaries finally got down where the secretaries were getting PCs, and one of the secretaries told me, she'd already spent her own money years ago on getting a fancy Macintosh mouse, and says, okay, you can switch me over as long as I can keep my mouse. And I said, sorry, it doesn't even plug in the same way. Before somebody starts shouting, well, they're both USB. No, not in those days. The PCs were still PS2, and I assume you could get a USB mouse. And
yeah.
I forget what the Apple connector was, but no, this was not... this was not Intel Macs. This was still PowerPC Macs.
Right, and they didn't even have PS2. It was their own proprietary connector. And the adapters for those to turn them to USB, you usually can't find them very cheap.
Well, and the whole thing, I think, is, you know, she got the mouse so she could have a you know, a right mouse button, well, you know, you're going to have a right mouse button now. It comes on all PCs by default. It doesn't look as, you know, the mouse doesn't look as fancy, but it's going to do everything your old mouse did. That's always, I thought was funny is, you know, right-click was supported in the Mac OS. They just didn't, you know, they just didn't think you needed it. Well, see, Joe, you had plenty of stuff to contribute in the show notes.
Well, something else that I've brought up on, like, all three of the shows that I'm on, I am still looking into getting a the Dell Venue 11 Pro 7130, just because of how compatible it seems to be with Linux, and the fact that it has user-replaceable M.2 slots. And for a tablet, that's kind of nuts. Now, a lot of people have told me that it's a really thick tablet, but I'm okay with that. I mean, it's got either an i3 or an i5 processor in it, so it's basically a laptop in tablet form. Oh, and I saw your other link that you had for your last item on the in the show notes, and I added a little something afterwards.
Yeah, I saw that. Sorry. Had that same mumble glitch that I was complaining about during the New Year's Eve show. I don't know if it has to do with my new ISP, though I have had it before. You know, when Joe was talking, he said a lot. And then, you know, from my end, it's, you know, it was like a broken record, and he repeated it like 20 times. And then finally, you know, even when that finished, you probably saw me hit my, you know, me light up. Well, you know, that was retarded several seconds. I mean, I'd hit the button and nothing lit up, and okay, something's broken. Then, you know, finally about 30 seconds later, you know, when I hit the button, then the, you know, my talk lips would light up at the same time. So, you guys hear me now?
Yeah,
we can hear you.
Okay, it's just annoying, and if you have to grab my version of the audio, that part's going to be messed up. Yeah, I think, you know, discuss the Walmart HPs when we get down to them. Joe, did you have anything else on your topics?
No, I just wanted to bring up that 7130 again because I find it really interesting with how out-of-the-box compatible it is, other than the Wi-Fi and Bluetooth, but that's easily corrected by a $7 M.2 user-replaceable card. And I really don't care how thick the device is.
Yeah, I mean, it's what we've been wanting for years is a more modular laptop where we can actually upgrade them like we could our desktops.
Yeah, well, I've seen some of the MSI ones are actually fairly easy to pop open and replace things for laptops, but it's just even more rare on a tablet.
And, you know, we have seen these things are blocky. I mean, made for people who are not tech. It's not like you open it up and replace the motherboard. It's like you take out this block, you know, that is the motherboard and shove another block in. And those haven't really, you know, case and all.
Right.
You know, I've seen prototypes on those, but they, you know, they've never known one to actually go in production yet.
What was that cell phone that was supposed to be modular a couple of years ago? That was all the hype. Let's see if I can look it up.
Yeah, you know, the trouble is everybody wants thin devices, and there's no way you can build something like that into a thin device.
Right, not something that users can just snap together and snap apart and replace things on. The Aria, was it?
That sounds familiar.
Aura.
Well, I mean, we talked about it on the New Year's Eve show. I hate to keep going back to New Year's Eve show. Different set of listeners. And, you know, when it's relevant to what we're talking about, you know, I don't feel too bashful bringing it back. But, you know, I told everybody a year ago, well, you know, I had sent email into Pine64, and they told me, I said, are you coming off a new laptop based on the ROC chip? Am I, you know, or do you have any kind of kit, you know, that I can just replace the boards that are, you know, inside my Pine book and upgrade to ROC chip? And this, you know, so I said, yeah, we got a kit coming out. Of course, it may be they decided the Pine 64, you know, failed endeavor since they haven't come out with a second version or whatever. But, you know, I said they assured me that was going to be possible, and no evidence of that has manifested yet. So that would have been the closest thing to the modular upgradable laptop that we've come to, probably.
Wow, did it quiet.
Right. I stopped whinging on.
Sorry, I've had my head buried into trying to mount the drive.
I just took the opportunity while Joe was looking for stuff to go AFK for a second.
Oh, what was I looking up again? Oh, yeah, it was Aura, Project Aura.
You have a link?
Darn it. I think I closed that tab. Oh, let me see. Project Aura. I have the Wikipedia page.
Oh, that's good enough.
So, let me post it into the mumble here, and then I will put it into the show notes.
Was that the Back to the Future music?
Yeah, that's my wife's alert sound.
Very nice.
Yeah. My wife's awesome that way. And wow, this mic picks up everything.
Reminds me of, a few years ago, a podcaster which will remain nameless, but I was listening to a show he was on, and, you know, he walked away at the end of the show and left his mic open, and then we could hear all the interaction with him and his family, and it was funny for a while, but after a while, and I didn't know him at the time, you know, I finally found a professional page and, you know, left him a voicemail message saying, dude, your mic is still open.
Did he laugh?
Oh, no. Him now that I imagine he might have.
I'm looking at various USB headsets now. Thank you, Honky.
You're welcome.
that was sarcasm.
I know.
But yeah. I'm wondering if you've had a chance to test out any other ones, because I'm looking at the Empow EG3 right now, and then I'm also looking at the Sadie's SA930, and I'm just wondering which ones are good and which ones suck.
I honestly don't know. I'm sorry. I had the Turtle Beach for a long time, and I bought this one on a Lark a long time ago because I wanted a one that was straight USB. And I used this one for a while. I don't know why I stopped using it, where I was running into a problem. But I stopped using it, went back to the Turtle Beach, and just kind of stuck with the Turtle Beach. I don't know. Turtle Beach also has a massively long cord to it, too.
That's what USB extenders are for.
True.
Yeah, mine is a Sound Blaster. I couldn't find the model number anywhere. It's USB wireless, and I don't know if I'd recommend it for podcasting. It's obviously a gaming headset.
Which one did you say it was?
It's a Sound Blaster. I'm not, but I couldn't find the model. But it's got the CAN earpieces, and I don't think it's bad for podcasting, but that's not what it was intended for. It was intended for gaming. It wasn't hugely expensive. wasn't cheap, but I am certain, if you're out there, someplace there's professional audio recording headset that's $500.
Yeah, and I'm fairly certain that I'm never going to buy it.
And I definitely appreciate those the canned headphones. Netminer, what do you use?
I actually use the built-in mic with my laptop and just a random set of headphones.
Well, there you go.
That works.
And yeah, Netminder sounds just fine. So,
on a side note, I was very shocked when I started reading into the Project Aura that it was developed by Google. I didn't think Google would have tried something like this. And obviously, that didn't get very far, but still.
Okay, before we do too much dead air, can we go on to my topics and go for that? And not that I have many.
Oh, go for it.
Okay, first, I am on a new ISP since you've last heard me on this show. Working through it, Neighbor had this. It's a my old ISP was over WiMAX. This one is through a 4G modem, and I was surprised at the speed. I didn't know 4G could do this, but I was over at Neighbor's the other day, and they had this new ISP, and they showed me, they showed me through an app on the phone, and I assume it's reporting accurately. I don't know if it's from the company. I don't think it was, but I think it was like 27 Mbps down. And my current ISP that I've had for years over the WiMAX, I was guaranteed 3 down. And in the last year, I think sometimes I've seen as high as 6. And it depends, but a lot of times, you know, it's down some. Well, if it's under 1, Joe, is somebody breaking china in your house?
Somebody's washing dishes.
I don't think she's breaking anything. Like I said, I was getting 3, sometimes it was 6, and then other times, it was down at 1. It would get to where, I couldn't stream YouTube or whatever, and I'd have to go, toggle uplink on and off. And sometimes I would get more speed, and sometimes I wouldn't. I was getting kind of irritated there. So, I had planned first the year to go with a different provider. There's a provider in town that guarantees 6, though I was paying $50 a month, and for 6 I was going to have to pay 80 with this other provider. And like I said, I was visiting friends, and they said no, first they're not local, they're national. Website is blazinghog.com, though they were getting to them through Facebook, and if you do a search on Blazing Hog, you'll hit the Facebook channel first. But if you go to Facebook channel, it'll direct you to blazinghog.com. So I thought it was a little iffy at first because it looked like they didn't, their only web presence was on Facebook. That made me a little suspicious. But then, yeah, they do have a web page. And then when I went to sign up, it says you can sign up online, but if you click the link, nothing happens. You pretty much have to call them, give them your credit card and all that stuff. I was going to pick, a professional sounding name for a business. Blazing Hog would probably not be top on my list. I mean, if you put Blazing Hog into into Google, you're going to come up with a bunch of barbecue restaurants. But apparently these guys have been around for a while. They were, I think, a Hughes Network redistributor, kind of got tired of the service they were getting there for their customers. They didn't think their customers were being served, and needed to go 4G. Okay, so initial setup cost. There is no contract that says, you've you're connected to our service net. Now you have to do our bidding for 2 years. You know, that's one of the things I liked. You had to buy the modem from them, and it was $150. I looked, you know, on Amazon when it came, that same model number is $110 on Amazon, but, you know, you add in the SIM card, you add in, you know, setup or whatever, you know, I'm not thinking I got getting hurt, you know, for the $40 difference. The other part is, installation is $150, but your first month comes out of there, which is $100 for the first year. Second year, you know, if I keep going with them, it's going to be $139. Again, sounds terribly expensive, but if I was going to have to pay $80 for six, you know, over 20 for seven, for 139 doesn't sound too bad. Okay, now I got the bare modem, got it plugged in, got it in my south window, which is really the only direction I can see out. I did try it in the garage facing east. That was even worse. I couldn't even get a connection until I took the modem and walked outside with it. So we'll see on that. It is probably directional. I do have a tower supposedly on the grain elevator. On the grain elevator, you know, less than half a mile to my south. But they said, you know, when I talked to them, they said, well, we can't tell if that's in our network or not. They do direct you to a website called cellmapper.net, which seems to be now non-functional. I don't think they were aware of it, so, you know, I brought them up to speed on that. So right now I'm getting, you know, I was getting three, you know, or I was paying for three. Right now I'm getting on average about 4.6 down. With just the bare modem. And I called tech support, and their first level tech support, just somebody answering the phone. You know, I said, I told them, hey, I am not getting what I was told to expect. And my neighbor said they didn't get it either until, you know, they got a booster antenna on their modem. So I want, and they said, you know what, you guys recommended one on Amazon, and what do I need to get? And you know, it's obviously they're just hiring somebody, probably service or whatever, to answer the phone. And they said, oh, you'll get a call back from level two support within 24 hours. And I was like, oh, okay. Wasn't really impressed with that. You know, less than an hour later, about 50 minutes, I got a call back from the tech support guru. Name is Buddy. These guys are down in Texas. You got to understand, that explains Blazing Hog and guys named Buddy. But, you know, I'm pretty sure the way he talked, like I said, I understand from my friends, I think they talked to the same guy. And, you know, like I said, this company came about because they were a reseller for Hughes, got tired of them, and figured they could do it better with 4G. And they said there were a couple guys, you know, there was these two guys at the head of the company. I'm thinking this Buddy is one of them. Maybe not. If not, he's a longtime employee. Could not, you know, talk to somebody who wanted to be more helpful. You know, we've all been on tech support, and some guy just on the line getting paid. You know, this is a guy who, you know, I get the impression wants to make you happy with their service. So even though I'm not getting the speeds yet that we talked about, I've kind of started to drink the Kool-Aid a little bit, and I'll keep reporting back once, you know, once I've worked out what it takes to get the speed, you know, And there may be various levels of expense, according to Buddy, that one might have to incur, to get the full connection. I'll keep reporting back at each stage here, and once I make a full evaluation, I'll also record an HPR on BlazingHog.com. You can count on that, Ken. But so far, you know, my whole impression talking to them, these guys are the real deal, and they aren't somebody out there just trying to grift you for your money. I may be gullible, I don't know, but we'll see. I could stop paying them tomorrow, you know, and as far as contracts go, so I don't think that's the case. Doesn't seem to me that's the case. But, you know, they said the first step, you're not getting the speed. This is what they told my neighbors down the road. Get an external antenna, and you look on Amazon for 4G, LTE, MIMO with a TS9 connector. And that's in the show notes. Now, the ones he was describing, there were some, like diamond shape, you know, you go on there and, you know, there's like six different vendors selling you the exact same hardware under different names. So there was one I'm sure he was describing was one that was a diamond shape antenna. And they were about starting at $17 and $16 or $17, but they were rated at 5 dBi. And then, for a couple bucks more, there was like a rectangular box antenna that was rated at 88 dBi. Now, again, it's one of those things, you know. 35 from one manufacturer might be better than 88 from another manufacturer, if you don't know. But I mean, if all you got to go is on the specs, and that's the gain level, the dBi. If all you could go on is the published specs, then I'm looking at, well, it's the same price, and I can get 88 dBi. And then... But the drawback on that is all of those that are 88, I think, are coming out of Europe. And at least European shippers, probably from Asia to Europe. None of them were on Prime. So, I put the first one in, the cheapest one. And it's, you know, it was like 28 January to... 14 December. So I don't want to wait that long. So then what I did is, you know, all the ones were obviously the same hardware. I put all of them into my to my shopping cart, and then hit next, and then deleted all the ones that had, you know, that were longer. And there's one that was first day might be January 9. So that was a lot closer, and that's what I'd spent about $4 more. It was about $20. So that was the one I got. So hopefully before the next show, I will be able to tell you if that did me any good or not. Buddy, the tech support guy, says, yeah, just get it. Yeah, I told him my situation. I was in a berm house. I really, really can only see out one direction. And he was like, but they're on the modem, they're like, that's a Netgear modem. They're, you know, there's like bars. I said, you know, yeah, you don't have to, connect it into your network. You just have to have her, you know, so take your antenna, get a long extension cord, your antenna and your modem, get a long extension cord and go walk around outside and, you know, it pointed to four points of the compass, and we'll see which way you need to go. And, you know, the way I need to go is might have to put the thing up in the attic where it's, you know, and point it in the direction, because that would be up above the berm. Though it wouldn't be above the hill, so we'll see, you know, if it had to go north. So we'll see, and, you know, we point out, okay, the next, you know, I told him, you know, let's just go ahead and get the best solution now. And he's, well, no, wait a minute, because that can be expensive. He said, you know, next level above this is a $150 external antenna. And if that don't get it, the next thing, you know, we know will work is a $500 cell signal booster, you know, that you would put up outside. So, you know, I have pretty good confidence that these people are trying to get me to have the best experience and not rip me off. So, even though I've never heard of them before last week, so, you know, I'll keep reporting back here, report to HPR once everything's said and done on my total experience.
You have the worst luck when it comes to ISPs.
Well, I'm in the worst place, you know. You know, I could go with satellite, but then I would have, you know, I would definitely have lag talking to you guys. Now, I know Lord D, you know, sometimes when he was talking to us, he was over satellite and it wasn't so bad. But, yeah, that's, if I can, I would rather go terrestrial.
Yeah, the more wired you are, the better. Is AT&T out there?
And yeah, that's one thing I didn't mention. You've got, when you sign up, you've got a choice between AT&T and T-Mobile. And T-Mobile is a lot more spotty, especially in this area. AT&T.
I was wondering if AT&T's fiber is out there.
No, not in a rural area. Though I don't know it. You know, when it was part of the whole Y2K thing years ago. Everybody who was on a little local phone network, you know, like a countywide phone network, they got fiber run rural to all the houses. But if you were on, you know, a major network like Southwestern Bell or essentially AT&T, whatever, like we were, no, you don't get that. In other words, the government subsidized rural fiber for all the small independent telephone companies. But if you were on a major telephone company, you were out of luck. If somebody wants to run me Fios, I'll gladly connect.
Right, but I don't want to be paying for the last mile installation.
Right, it was like, well, this was 20 years ago. My old house, they had the right way over the phone network, but, you know, they ran fiber right past my place to the, you know, that went to the cable company in Pratt. And, you know, Computer Club was in there, you know, touring the cable company. It's like, hey, you know, your fiber goes right under my driveway. What would it cost to connect into that? And they were like, yeah, that takes like a $50,000 thing.
And once again, we're back to, nope, I'm good.
Exactly. But, I mean, the speeds that they're claiming are approximately the same when I was living in Pratt for a few months after the fire and had cable. So, you know, definitely if I could get, and like I said, this is nationwide. They've got a map on the website, AT&T. Most of the country shows up red, though you might want to zoom in on your area. I mean, look at my area. It looks like it's pretty saturated on AT&T. T-Mobile, not so much. And the thing with this is, you know, technically you could pick up the modem and the antenna and put it in your suitcase and take it traveling with you. I'm not sure I'd want to do that because with my luck, they'd lose my bag and then I'd get home and I'd have to call them up and say, they lost my modem. You need to send me a new one.
Well, how big is the modem?
Take a month. Oh, no bigger than a router, maybe a little smaller.
Sounds perfect for carry-on.
Oh, yeah. I'm not saying I wouldn't recommend it if you're a road warrior or something and, you know, you go to hotels and it's an exorbitant amount for, you know, the amount of data that you need to do your work. I mean, and really the modem's $150 and like I said, the antenna I'm at least starting with is 20. That's not so much that, you know, maybe you call them up and say, you know, I'd like to have another modem just for travel.
Yeah.
Like I said, you know, the few weekends I'm out of town at fests or whatever, usually there's hotel Wi-Fi, though it's, you know, obviously it's throttled. You know, it's probably not worth me taking it with me, but you know, if I was some guy at work remote, you know, constantly, like, you know, well, like Rich or whatever, you know, and Joel, you know, he's gone, you know, a few weekends a year or whatever, definitely I might look, if I was already paying for it and they could, you know, like, and I mean, there's a few guys in rural areas that are HPR contributors and complain, yeah, we can't get any good internet. Well, let me be the beta tester and I'll let you guys know. And if it works out, then you might look into it. Like I said, $139 a month, that, you know, kind of expensive, but, you know, compared to the alternatives that I have here, I think definitely worth it.
Are you capped?
No, not at all. That was the other thing. The 6 gig down, it was capped at like 5 gig a month.
That's terrible.
I mean, not totally capped, but they would slow you down. That's like five ISOs. I think it was 5 gig a month. The other I look into, I'm in Straight Talk for my phone. And they, you know, they have 4G modems. I looked into it, and it was like, yeah, all, you know, different levels and different caps, and they're, you know, well, even at their top one, their cap was way low.
Who's your cell phone provider?
Straight Talk.
Oh, Straight Talk. Okay, but you said T-Mobile was there.
No, I said when you pick from which network you want to be on when you go through Blazing Hog, you have to pick between T-Mobile and AT&T.
And
in my
is T-Mobile
area,
T-Mobile in your area?
AT&T. It is, but AT&T was way more saturated.
I just ask because they got those I don't know what it is for a single person. Because I do family plans, it's either $40 or $70, and then yeah, they'll throttle you after you get up to like 50 gig, but only if there's heavy network usage in your area. And then you could use something like Easy Tether, and then turn a computer into a router.
Yeah, I mean, with Straight Talk, the original contract I signed, I can't even do wired tethering, much less Wi-Fi.
Well, that's what Easy Tether is for. Yeah.
Which makes me mad because, you know, I'm getting so many bits. What is your business where the bits are going?
Exactly. But no, Easy Tether is actually, well, back in the day before T-Mobile changed their policy on completely stopping your data once you got to a certain point. Easy Tether was used so that it looks like all the data is being used by an application that's on the phone, as opposed to using the built-in tethering, which was easier to monitor.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant Easy Tether was a service you bought from the service provider. Okay.
No, it's just an application that anybody can download from the Android store.
Well, that's good information I didn't know.
So yeah, if it works on your phone and it works well, you'll also have to install something on your computer that you're going to use, then just test it out. Maybe you can get rid of the internet service that you have. But it does mean that you're also restricted to either buying a second line or only having internet at home when you're home with your phone hooked up to it.
Right. Well, that usually wouldn't be a problem, but like I said, Straight Talk's restrictions, I don't, looking at it, I don't know if that was a practical way to go. Like I said, I evaluated buying their home access points, and it's the speed is the same, but as it's
They add more
you pay more
restrictions
per
because it's
month.
not a cell phone.
Well, you pay more per month for a higher cap. I mean, you start at like $20, and I think goes up to $80, and
Do they
still.
hard cap you, or is it just a slowdown?
No, they just slow you down. They knock you down to like 2G.
Is that network based or like usage based? So if there's nobody else that's using the same tower as you trying to use data, do they prioritize or do they not limit you?
Far as I know, you hit the cap, then it's 2G. Doesn't matter.
Right. Okay. See, AT&T and T-Mobile both, if I remember correctly on AT&T, change that so that it's network based. So if you've hit your cap and there's a lot of people using the network at the same time as you, then they'll throttle you. Otherwise, you're not throttled.
And like I said, with the Blazing Hog, there's supposedly no data cap.
Right. So it should always have those speed. What have you done any speed tests to get averages?
Yeah, like I said, both. Now I had one on speedtest.net that looked like it hit 10, but generally, whereas I'd also done one on fast.com, said it was 4.6, but generally both of them, in mid fours all the time.
Okay, which isn't terrible. It's usable.
Yeah, but for the price I'm going to be paying, especially when it goes up,
Yeah, $130-something a month for four, that's harsh.
Yeah, like I said, I think it's because, add on more powerful external antennas or move it around, mount the antenna outside.
Even if you were getting 50, that's still harsh. Now, I understand it's because you're rural and it's difficult to get high-speed internet out there, but you say you do have cell phone service out there, so I would say try out Easy Tether with that and then see about switching to, well, I guess you could do it with either AT&T or T-Mobile, but I don't know the costs on AT&T. I know T-Mobile's got some really great pricing right now for their unlimited plans.
Okay, I may have to look. Straight Talk, my phone has never seemed to hit more, any faster than Wi-Fi, and it's 4G, so. And I first got it, well, not necessarily this phone. When I first got a, it would have been 3G, when I first got a smartphone, YouTube was unwatchable. Over the cell network.
Yeah, pretty sure when I got a smartphone the first time, YouTube didn't exist yet.
Like I said, I'll keep everybody apprised. I may be way too optimistic, but we'll see. I mean, my neighbors, if their speeds are to be believed, I mean, definitely they've seen a difference because. They can stream more than one thing at once. Kids could be watching one show and they could be watching another. And again, they were on the same provider I was and had the same experiences. Yeah, things would slow down and then you'd have to go toggle power on the uplink and hope it made things better. And they told me, yeah, just forget those guys, go with these guys. And downloads definitely. you know, I've seen an improvement. Not, you know, not like, you know, at 23 or 27, it'd be like, you know, yeah, an ISO would be down in 5 minutes. Okay. And the next thing I had, this is something we really kicked around pretty good at the New Year's Eve show. But when we were all on the channel, we kind of talked about some of these mini laptops like we did, you know, last show. One of the things that come up is this Gemini PDA, which is not as powerful, but it's a lot more compact than a lot of the ones we talked about. This, you know, this really could go in your pocket. It is, you know, and it does, there is a model, goes on cellular networks, and with it closed up, you can use as a cell phone. It's not like an Android smartphone, but you can't, closed up, but you can actually make phone calls. It, you know, it's like this big, huge block you're putting up to your ear, but, you know, if you could eliminate one device out of your pockets and have this one huge thing, and it's set up to boot into both Linux. I'm not sure what version of Linux, maybe Debian and Android. And if it wasn't $600, I'd have one.
Right, yeah, I do remember this conversation, too, from the New Year's show. And I just have to say, for that $600 price point, yeah, it does have the cell capability and the ability to be a cell phone. But if you're looking at just the stats of the device itself and its ability to run things, then really, for in the same price range, maybe a little more, the GPD Pocket.
Right. The Pocket's a lot more powerful. Like I said, last time and during the HPR show, I am looking forward to, you know, looking at the specs on the version of the GPD. It's going to be $300. I am certain it's going to be huge compromises, but $300, I could maybe go, $600, and we talked about this a lot. Okay, if this was something I could justify for business or whatever, you know, fine, because I've spent more. I spent $1,400 on a Palm Top PC, 20 years ago, maybe not, 15 years ago, but... And I got a lot of utility out of it in the couple years I used it. If I were to get this now, it would be, you know, a GPD or a Gemini or whatever. It would be a lot more rather than I'm justifying it, as a business expense rather than it would be, you know, take it out of my pocket at a Linux Fest and say, look how cool I am.
Yeah, that's about it.
I mean, you should have seen me at, it was Self. I brought the, and usually been bringing it to the last several podcasts. This time I actually took it to talks, the Pinebook. And people were like, is that a Pinebook? Cool. You know, so I was Mr. Cool and Popular for a few seconds. And the trouble is, you get one of these, and then, okay, maybe you can work with it for a couple of years, and 4 years later, it's just not good enough, and you got to do something else. So, I mean, something in that exact form factor, I would love to have, but you're right. You know, at that price point, it's just, doesn't have the power.
Right. Oh, and have you heard anything else about that Mi mini computer?
No, got something earlier in December that, you know, saying, oh, we're shipping to the, the first people to support to invest on Indiegogo or whatever it was. But, mine hasn't shown up yet.
Yeah, and from what you were saying, you were pretty early in. But you're also U.S., and usually most of their manufacturers are in China, and so they'll ship to places closer, or they'll have to wait for a boat to get full enough before they'll ship to the U.S.
Yeah, I don't think I was ultra early, and I mean, there was still stuff available, but, you know, I think it had been open for a while. I don't have trouble believing there's people ahead of me on the list, but, you know, we'll see.
Right. And they're still saying the M3 processor, right?
Yeah, that's, you know, they were saying you had to make it bigger, you know, to... And a bigger screen, you know, which is not a bad thing. Well, it still fits in my pocket. You know, I said, I mean, you know, well, you're increasing the other specs. Well, that's not too bad. Maybe better than saying, yeah, the heck with it. We're going back to the smaller, more efficient processor. I might go either way on that, but since I spent a little more, you know, I might say, hey, you know, give me some of my money back then.
Yeah.
They're also talking, I think, delays on the Atari 2600, too.
Hmm. Okay, my buddy that bought that 7130 that I was talking about just sent me a picture with the Bluetooth and the Wi-Fi working. So he did get the card and put it in.
Sweet. At least it's not like the old days where we have to do... NDIS wrapper to get the Wi-Fi working?
Right. I'm not sure on that one. Now, I've heard of recompiling the kernel, but...
What it was is NDIS wrapper was a thing that you... It was software that you could wrap around the Windows driver. You know, because that was a lot of things that didn't work early on. First Linux computer I set up was a desktop. And I stick in like a gigabyte card. I think this was Ubuntu 6.3 or whatever, you know, and or maybe it was 6.10. And the Wi-Fi didn't work on the and gigabyte, you know, really was very early on compatible with Linux. I won't say very early on, you know, when a lot of us got into it. You know, before I could do that, there was a new version of Ubuntu out, and Wi-Fi just started working.
I still have to use the FW cutter every once in a while for Wi-Fi.
The what?
It's the way to get the Wi-Fi drivers.
Yeah, you should do an HPR on that because, you know, since about 6 months after I started in Linux, I have never had a problem with Wi-Fi.
Oh, I have. There's just, like, some distros right off the bat, I can't get Wi-Fi working at all. Some of them is, start the distro up, I can get Wi-Fi working automatically, and other things I can't get it working at all. B43 FW cutter, the Debian specific, like if you do straight Debian, you'll definitely have to with some of my machines, I definitely have to get that.
Well, I've done Debian, never had a problem, but you know, put a link in the show notes. I do remember early on laptops, install an ISO and, you know, your screen would be the middle two thirds of the LCD and say, you know, rather than beating your head up against the wall, grab another Linux version. You'd keep installing Linux until you found one that actually used the LCD on your laptop.
No, you get something similar these days, but more often on tablets than on laptops. I haven't seen that any drivers issues on laptops in a long time now. But tablets, it does happen, and sometimes you'll have to go and find the drivers and push them in, and things will work afterwards, or sometimes you just simply cannot find the drivers. For various things, Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, or sometimes even the touchscreen.
Well, the B403, yeah, I thought you cut here. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off there. I was just going to say that the B403 FW cutter is one of those things where it's like a program you automatically install, and it goes out, finds the proper Broadcom drivers, and then pulls it in, and then everything works. But the problem is that it really annoys the hell out of me is it's like if I install a Debian system and I am not wiredly connected to something, I can't do anything until I get a wired connection and then get the B43 FW cutter, and then I can finally get wireless running.
Okay, like I said, is that the link you posted in the show notes, or is that talking about inserting the external hard drive?
The one in the show notes right now is about the external hard drive, and I'm in the middle of doing that right now. I was kind of hoping that this, part of the instructions, because if you go to all the way down the end of that post, part of the instructions was to do an rsync from your home directory over to the new hard drive, and I'm still in the middle of doing an rsync from the home directory over to the hard drive, and then the last thing is basically removing everything from the old home directory and then just changing it in the FSTAB.
Oh, I was going to say, when we kind of walked on each other, yeah. I had that whole broken record thing with Joe again. Well, it wasn't Joe before, it was Honky before, but that's not fun. Or no, it was Joe the first time.
So the link I put in for the B43 FW cutter is not necessarily a very descriptive one, but I think it gives the general idea that if you have a Broadcom driver that is not supported out of the box in your Linux distribution, if you can get a network like a LAN connection first and then download this thing and then run it, you can then get wireless running and the older Broadcom. It goes and fetches the older Broadcom drivers. Like, one of the ones that I found really odd that didn't have it was, that didn't support it, was like Ubuntu Mate. Ubuntu Mate out of the box didn't have support for Broadcom drivers. Like, I can understand Debian. Debian is you know, they... it's in the repos, you can get it, but it's, and it even asks for it, like, when I do an install of a straight Debian system on one of these laptops, sometimes it'll ask for it, for the driver, which I for some reason, I can't figure out how to put it on something to, I don't know, try to get it installed beforehand as opposed to after the fact. I can't get it right. But, I would figure Debian, because Debian has their own way of doing things that's kind of, they don't want to, what is the word I'm thinking of? It's getting late, I'm getting tired. Like, they have the whole DFSG, which is the Debian Free Software Guidelines, where, you know, the stable branch and with, The straight stable branch without the contrib or the non-free is basically just straight like GPL style, where, you know, there's nothing like non-free whatsoever in there, and then you can obviously add on from there. So that I can understand why in a vanilla install of Debian that it's not in there, but I figure with Ubuntu, especially Ubuntu Mate, that it would be, but unfortunately it's not.
Yeah, I'm surprised. You know, might be different. Well, like your generic Ubuntu, like there's a tick box for use non-free repositories, and maybe, you know, the Mate guys have that disabled by default, and say maybe Kubuntu guys, you know, I don't know if they have that clicked on. I mean, usually that's one of the first things I do when I install Ubuntu is click on non-free.
Did you glitch again?
I'm running Nitrix OS, and I use your link, Joe, for the Android emulator, and when I was running Pure Nitrix OS, certain things were not showing up in the repositories, even though those instructions were for Ubuntu. I haven't tried rerunning them now that I've installed LXQT Desktop to see if that makes any difference. But it puzzled me because, when I do an update, it's hitting Ubuntu repos to do the update. I mean, it hits a Nitrix specific one first, and then everything else it hits Ubuntu Ubuntu repos. So maybe I haven't gone in and said do non-free. Might explain the problem.
I kind of wish Debian was that easy. It was just a little checkbox, but with Debian you got to check fix your sources.list and go into there and add the not non-free, the contrib, the non-free, and then the what is the other one that I have to add in automatically? I want to say it's media, but I don't think that's right. It's how you get the non-free codexes and stuff like that. It might be media. Hold on.
Media sounds right for the non-free codexes. Well, I mean, Debian doesn't want it to make it that easy to get the non-free stuff. I guess that's why we have Ubuntu.
Yeah, it's pretty easy on Mint. It's just when you install, you click non-free and automatically adds it.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've run Mint. It's like I used to love Mint, but then it got, it kind of seems slow and glitchy all the time to me.
It might have improved. I don't know when the last time you ran it is.
Oh, it's probably been 8 years.
Then yeah, it's improved since then.
I mean, like I always say, I like to run something different and completely different on each box. So, spread my knowledge around. But, for a couple years there, Mint was my go-to for install it and forget it.
Yeah, I have Mint on almost everything, other than the Raspberry Pis, which you can't get Mint on. And the one of my laptops has Ubuntu on it, but I'm running Cinnamon on top of that, so.
And I mentioned this stuff I got myself for Christmas or Black Friday or whatever, but I am enjoying tonight rocking my Frigidaire desktop refrigerator for beer.
Cool. Just a 6-pack or 2 6-packs?
Yeah, single 6-pack. It seems to work like a regular refrigerator. I mean, there was one I got that was shaped like a Coke machine. It was cheap. For one beer and set on your desktop, it was essentially a heat sink and a fan. And if something was already cold, yeah, I'd keep it cold for an hour or so. But this, yeah, it's got to be actually a little bitty tiny refrigerator.
Oh, can you send a link on that one?
I'll see if I can find one. It's you're probably not going to find it as cheap as I did on Black Friday sale in Walmart, but they're you wait till next Black Friday, you'll be able to get it in Walmart, I'm sure.
Right. Well, I saw one the other day in an ad somewhere that looked like Iron Man's helmet.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Was it a single or could you hold multiple?
Oh, it held multiple, at least in the picture that I saw. I didn't chase the link on it or anything, so I would have to find it again.
50, what are you drinking tonight?
Well, I usually do Steel Reserve.
There you go. I figured you were going to say Schlitz.
Oh, please no.
Right?
No good Schaefer beer or?
Oh, please. I'm a big fan of Micro Boost. Steel Reserve is high power, alcohol content, obviously alcohol added, fortified beer. It's a lager. I usually prefer an ale, but it is more malty than it than it is hoppy. I always say the beer, my favorite beer is one I've never tried, but X1101, he loves a really malty beer, really hoppy beer. And, you know, I'm like the opposite. I want a malty beer. And this is it. Just enough hops for flavor. And I actually like it better than a lot of more expensive beers, but this is cheap. It is an 8-point beer, and it keeps me happy.
All right, I found one on Amazon. There isn't as many pictures as I would want.
And I'm sure post. Frigidaire is a licensed name. You know, it's some Asian thing, and then is Frigidaire still a brand out there anymore?
No clue.
I don't think so.
I wanted to say that used to be the old Sears brand, and then I saw a link today that said Sears is going under. It's like, you know, I got my dishwasher in my fridge from Sears.
My local Sears is gone.
Yeah, this will hold 1 6-pack.
Yeah, this is what I got. Yeah, you can get them various colors. I just hit Walmart.com, and I see it in pink. Mine is black. Mine is not pink.
If it's pink and it keeps your beer cold, does it really matter?
Fair.
Not at all. And they did have pink ones in the stack when I, you know, when. But I got the black one.
So my wife for Christmas went around to the some of the local breweries and picked me up a couple of just a few offerings from the local breweries. And basically all I got to do is, my garage is right behind the door behind me. I just basically leave this stuff in the garage, and that's good enough for me right now. It's cold enough out there. Granted, come summertime, that's a different story, but.
Yeah, I'd have to worry about things freezing.
You get to freezing temperatures in Texas?
We have this last winter, at least.
Yeah, I think you guys have been colder than we have.
I don't know. I think the lowest I've seen is like 24 or something.
Yeah, it's been weird. I've been worried about, you know, when you have too mild a winter, you know, the wheat grows too fast and it gets all burned in a cold snap in spring.
So I can't.
Okay, what I posted, I think, was all the Walmart mini fridges. And I want to say, you know, I paid $20 for mine on the, Black Friday. Okay, actually, because I'm a jerk, I was there on Thanksgiving Day, you know, and abusing all the poor Walmart employees who had to be there on all day on Turkey Day.
On the Iron Man
one. On that page.
Sorry, on the Iron Man one, there was a ton of things on the side, and I can't see on the side of the fridge. I can't see what they are. There's like two plugs and several different plugs.
I was looking at that. Let's see if I can get it brought back up, because I took it down. Okay, yeah, on the Amazon site you can see that there's two power plugs there and two different switches, probably one's AC and one's DC, because, yeah, really not descriptive on Amazon at all. The Overstock one had a couple more pictures, but I don't know if it's saying what those different connections are there.
Well, if it's like what I bought some years ago, it may have a big power supply and power the refrigerator itself off of a basically a cigarette lighter type plug.
Yeah,
mine
car accessory.
Mine has both the cigarette lighter and a AC plug. And on the ones I pictured, it's identical to the ones labeled, pink one is labeled RCA. But mine's labeled Frigidaire.
Is it a 4-liter?
Well, it takes 6 cans. Now, I scroll down, and there's one that looks like a big Coke can that takes 8 cans. Yeah. There's one. Oh, wow. There's one that takes 12 cans. in RCA.
Yeah, okay, I see that one for $56.25. Little retro yep. there.
Yeah, they ought to have one that, you know, is like the old water bath, Coke machines from like even before the 50s, from the 40s or whatever.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. But I have a giant refrigerator in the garage close to my desk.
Yeah, but the whole thing. Oh, okay. Close to your desk. Yeah. It's like it's like me. It's probably a 2-minute round trip, you know, and, you know, beer's right there now.
Yeah.
At that, at first, I don't think it keeps it as cool, but, you know, you leave it in there a while and it gets cold.
Probably better at keeping it cold. So you pull it out of the one fridge and you stick it into the one that's closer to you and it'll stay cold.
Yeah. Yeah, I think if you were to put completely warm beer in there, you'd be waiting a while.
Wonder how good a little tiny fridge would be for sub-ambient temperature cooling.
Well, no, I mean, if you're not into beer or cola, and people kept stealing your lunch or whatever, you could put this on your desk and put your sandwich in there every morning.
You mean people get time to walk to the fridge at work?
Good point.
I've heard this crazy thing where people actually, like, leave the office and go to lunch. I've never experienced it, though.
It'd be my luck, if I had a cubicle or whatever, I would go someplace for 10 minutes to talk to somebody, and I'd come back and my sandwich would be gone.
No, see, with my luck, if I walk away from my computer for more than 15 minutes, I start getting phone calls. This is broke, and you're the only person that can fix it quickly. Get back here.
Yes, there are drawbacks to being indispensable.
Yep.
Of course, they probably can't fire you either.
Oh, just because one person thinks I'm indispensable, that doesn't mean that another person does. And when you have as many bosses as I do, there's always going to be somebody.
There's one on there ranges from $66 to $104. What do you get for $104? I mean, you would think Walmart, yeah, this would be the price. I understand on Amazon, you go on Amazon and you find a thing and, you know, there are people cheating you out of your money and you look at, yeah, it's the same thing and somebody is charging you twice as much for it.
All right, we ready to move on to your next item, 50?
I think so. I was going to say, for the people saying, you got way out of Linux, Tilts this last week, when you were there, not one single open source topic. So I think we've at least talked about Linux tonight. So, hey, we're still serving our base at least as well as Tilts. Okay, the only thing I guess I had left, and it's not so much Linux, because the gaming part is probably partially going to be in Windows. I had been looking at Linus Tech Tips on YouTube, and this is not our Linus.
Love that show.
Yeah. He does some good stuff. But he'd been talking about the Walmart gaming PCs, whether they were worth it or not. And the desktops he kind of derided, but the laptop, apparently it had been reassigned from $1,600 to $600, or no, to $800, half as much. And, he said it's not a great gaming laptop, but, it was based on a laptop from another company that was still $1,600. And he said, $1,600, maybe a pass. And that's what they paid for it. They bought it for $1,600 and got in their lab and said, maybe not such a good price, but after they got it, it dropped to $800. He's like, yeah, for $800, this is pretty tolerable. You can check it out. And I'd known from earlier video, they weren't really impressed with the desktops. So I went on there, to look, and I was mainly looking for a desktop system. And, saying, well, have the prices dropped on the desktop similarly? But then I looked, not only were the ones they were really promoting, but there was third party that they are connected to, and might not be the best one, I don't know, but they had a connection to a company who was doing refurb HP systems, and let's see, let me get the specs here, second, and this one that I got, they say out of stock. And I'm not surprised because they were higher priced systems that didn't have as good specs, in my opinion. Okay, it says refurbished HP gaming computer, and it's one of these really thin, chassis. I think it could go either way. You could lay it flat or lay it up, put it up as a tower, but the optical drive is, if you make it a tower, then the optical drive is sideways. But refurbished HP gaming computer, NVIDIA GT 1030 video card, Core i5 3.2 gigahertz, 4 core, I think, 16 gig, 1 terabyte Windows 10, Wi-Fi, and the main thing was the terabyte hard drive, because you went up in price. And they did smaller hard drives and less memory. So I'm thinking I got the tail end of a deal, and because these are out of stock now. And then they had higher price. But I looked. I didn't get that. I'm sorry. I probably walked on you, Joe.
Oh, no. I posted another one right below yours. That's also from Walmart. It's got a slightly slower processor, but it's also like $100 for, and it's still got the graphics card and everything else, and it's in stock.
Okay, great. Well, that was what I was comparing. I said, are these higher priced ones? Have they got a faster i5? And it looked like, kept looking like the same processor. And like I said, one of them was 8 gig, and, one of them has a smaller hard drive. So, 8 gig RAM, and one of them had a, 250 meg hard drive, and I was wondering, well, why are these more expensive? So, I thought, maybe these are faster processors, but I looked at the same processor, same video card, and I said, well, maybe these came later. So I grabbed the one, and it's a 32230 for an i5 with a NVIDIA discrete processor, 16 gig of RAM. And I figured, well, it's not an i7, certainly not, but that ought to be enough to play, current games, not with everything turned on. But that ought to be enough to get me into Battlefield 1, GTA 5, some of the other things I've been wanting to play. And I'm sorry, not in Linux for those particular games.
Yeah, I think that other one that I posted would probably get you on as well. You might have to upgrade the RAM, but it should work. I don't know about that NVIDIA 1030 though, because Passmark places it pretty low. I mean, lower than the 750.
Well, I might have to upgrade to a better video card. We'll see.
Oh, did you order one?
Yeah, it should be here next week sometime. What I will do, we talked about, we had another dual core, Core 2 Duo system. I will pull, like, you know, 5-6 gig drive out of it, put it in this, because what I think I did is same thing I did with my first gaming system. I bought a video card off of eBay and it was damaged or whatever, you know, because put the video card in and nothing worked right. You know, I couldn't get Linux installed. Windows looked like crap. And that was the first time I bought, you know, like I bought a video card off eBay, and it actually took a Windows tool, but, you know, said, yeah, you know, your one processor is working and the other one is fried. Did try to resurrect my Solus box by installing different desktops and login managers. That didn't work. So probably what I'm going to do is, you know, pull the drive that has the Windows games on it and see if I can clone that into the new system. I don't know if there's... I hate to have to reinstall everything from scratch. If I get my new faster link, that won't be so bad. But until then, you know, if there's a way to say, okay, move this folder from the old Windows into the new Windows, that's gonna, you know, make it a lot easier to migrate things. The Linux stuff, I don't have so many things installed under Linux. It's probably reinstall all those from scratch. So I'll definitely have dual boot like I had in my old gaming system, but you know, most stuff for gaming, oh hell, have to go in Windows.
I wonder what Linus does with all those computers that he builds and tests and everything else.
I know, does Linus sit around and build computers? I didn't know that.
Yeah, Linus does do computer builds and tests out new hardware, so I just wonder what they do.
Well, apparently they don't send it to us cheap. And no, that's not a knock against Linus. I mean, if he or the Linux Foundation is paying for this hardware, they need to get their money back out of it. So I don't think I have anything else.
Me either. Plus, I think we've run a little long today.
That's true, too.
Yeah, I think we run longer when we have nothing to talk about. I will just throw out there, since I'm on DC Channel, watch the first episode of Young Justice Season 3 this evening. Or no, earlier today. I was going to try to get another one in before the show, but I kept doing this thing and that thing and then ran out of time.
Oh, that's available now?
Yeah, first 6 episodes.
I will have to check that out.
And, of course, this is usually what we deal with in the pre-show, but if anybody wants to talk about it, last night I watched the Season 2, Episode 2 of The Orville, and I found that very interesting. And Season 5, Episode 1 of Gotham.
I have yet to watch. I am so far behind on Gotham, but I gotta watch the new season of Orville.
Yeah, I've got to watch the first season.
You know, I found one old grumpy guy, well, not even as old as me, I don't think. It's like, oh, man, see, you know, second episode, don't even watch because it's too gross. But, you know, if you look behind that, you know, and no one going to too far, but there are things that, you know, this generation would never have touched, you know, and someone's kind of kind of grody, but I mean, you know, human stuff, you know, the fetus, you know, that, you know, did not kind of go on a total win, the second episode, and, you know, and, I won't spoil it for anybody, but it's just, you know, anybody comparing it to, Next Generation or whatever, well, you know, as far as drama, Next Generation would have never gone there. I mean, you know, definitely, I think this sets up Orville as its own thing.
Was Commander Pike? Or is Commander... I know Commander Pike is supposed to be in the upcoming episodes.
No, I don't think... Discovery hasn't restarted yet, has it?
I'm not sure. I haven't been keeping track. I didn't even watch season one.
Well, you know, I like, you know, I went and like everybody said, oh man, it's horrible. And then mid-season, yeah, well, it's getting better. It, you know what they, you know what? Well, you were there on Delts, and you know, it's like I said, the end. Yeah, it had to be. It was had to watch. So. Yeah, I finally gave in around January last year, and I had, you know, I had month three, and then, you know, took the next month paid to catch up, and I don't know, I'll have to look on Discovery, you know, if there's a whole bunch of thing. Well, yeah, if you don't get it at the beginning, you can't see the first five episodes or whatever. Yeah, I would like to do the thing, do a month, and then binge the whole thing and be done. But I'll have to look at what the optimal place to jump in is. And I have to admit, if they do a Picard series, if they do more than one thing that I would watch, then I might just leave it year-round. You know, people might say DC was the same thing, but it's not just Titans. Then it goes into Young Justice. Then it goes into Doom Patrol, and back into Young Justice. So it's not just one series.
Yeah, it's just hard for me to justify another streaming service.
I know. I appreciate that, and I wish we were like. You know, get it on Netflix, every place else but here. But, you know, I do not regret watching Titans. You know, I understand, you know. Oh, it gets to be Disney and all the, you know, all the Marvel stuff comes along with it. And trouble is, you know, you have a tripartum thing. You know, you have Netflix, which aired the shows. You had Marvel, which owns the material. And I believe it's ABC, which actually produced the Netflix Marvel shows along with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I think I said CBS the other day, but I think it's ABC. But it's one of the networks, and Marvel has the whole thing, or no, Netflix has the whole thing. You cannot use these characters for 2 years after we cancel the shows anywhere. So everybody's saying, oh, well, you know, they'll just move the shows over to the Disney service. No, sorry. You may see the characters again, but probably not the same actors.
Well, yeah, but we have had year and a half, almost 2 year delays before, so.
Well, I mean, you got the guys, you know, who played, Daredevil, you know, he's saying, you know, I'll never play that role again.
Really?
Yeah. You know, he's come out and said, not his decision. But, he's saying, you know, no, it's done. I'll never be able to play that again. you know, Vincent D'Onofrio, who, you know, the definitive kingpin. You know, I don't know how you could find anybody better than him to do the role. He hasn't said that, but I mean, yeah, it'd be great to see him in a couple years down the road in a Spidey movie, but I would not cross my fingers.
Did they cancel the Daredevil yet?
Yes,
Daredevil is canceled.
Oh, that's miserable.
But in a couple of days, we get... Go ahead.
No, see, the Netflix had nothing, you know, back in the day. So they were paying Marvel these exorbitant amounts of money for the licenses. And if you've noticed, you know, Netflix have added all these their own, you know, their own shows. And it used to be, well, I think it still is, you know, the movies and stuff that they bring in is pretty much all horror movies. That always used to make me, you know, the only genre that they kept up with was horror movies. But, you know, they've done all this original content, and that's because they were paying these, you know, ridiculous fees to Marvel. And so this is why they are canceling all these popular shows, is because, you know, they're, you know, paying the licensing fees. They're kind of breaking even, maybe. Well, certainly they're making money, but they're saying, yeah, we can pull our own stuff out of our butts and make more money.
And they've done all right at that.
It sounds like the Daredevil actor says, I don't want to get caught in this buzzsaw again.
No, I think he would be happy playing Daredevil the rest of his life. It's like, but he's saying, you know, it ain't going to happen.
So, what are you saying, that the Disney or whoever is not going to reboot, or the license fees are going to kill the entire idea?
Well, like I said, Netflix has an agreement that says Disney cannot use these characters even in the MCU for 2 years after the shows are canceled. So you cannot have, even if they pick a different character, like, you know, Flash is different on in the DCU than he is on the TV show. And I really don't care for Flash in the DCU myself. But, you know, the contract with Netflix is, you know, for 2 years, you cannot use these characters either on TV or in the movies. Okay, let's say 2 years. And we know how hard it is. You go 2 years, like, say, the Firefly cast, you know, hey, we want to do a movie, you know, and it's really hard to bring everybody back in, you know, because everybody's always, you know, committed to other projects or whatever. And that would be the same way. You couldn't even talk to these people for 2 years. Even though there's going to be a Disney Channel, you know, so 2 years from now, you know, they could do a Daredevil series, but, you know, are the actors going to be available? Probably not.
That's exactly why it was written, to allow them to break continuity.
You know, that the shows were not produced by Netflix. They are I know they're produced by one of the networks. I want to say it was ABC now. The same people who are doing Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I did hear this week that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is not only coming back for one season, at least two.
Well, if it can bypass all this crap, I can see that happening very easily.
Well, that's one of the speculations. How do they get around the Snapiverse? Do they just say, oh, yeah, we came back after, Avengers 4, you know, that's some of the big speculation.
Well, I think they've already had one guy regenerated or something, so it, you know, you can't keep a good, you know, it's something new and different with a good track record.
I kind of think it's humorous that they're, Netflix is killing off, whether it's because of popularity or because of the fact of their, that, you know, that Marvel or Disney is going to start their own streaming service or whatever, but that the Netflix shows aren't as popular as Marvel Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Look, I enjoy Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., but it's not nearly as good as any of the stuff. Like, take whatever you think. Like, a lot of people didn't like Iron Fist. Take Iron Fist. I think Iron Fist was head and shoulders above any of the best episodes of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Well, that's why I got back into my Netflix. I mean, I got into Netflix and said, man, there ain't crap here, but, slasher films. And I dropped my membership. And then everybody said, oh, man, you got to watch Daredevil. You know, so I got back into it. And, you know, there's other stuff there now. I mean, just on Netflix, there is more stuff I want to watch than I have hours in the day for. You know, even without the Netflix stuff. But, you know, I went in with the Netflix stuff. I am not sure I won't go out with the Netflix stuff. Or the Marvel stuff, sorry.
Yeah, Netflix has a lot of great content up there. And they've done a good job creating their own content, too. And, I mean, I almost said Buffy, but it's not Buffy. It's the Sabrina. Did you see did anybody see the Christmas episode of Sabrina?
Not yet. I've been I watched the first two episodes of Sabrina. I will admit, I'm not at all religious, but I'm religious enough watching a show when people are going along saying, "Praise Satan." That you know, that it doesn't bother me a little bit.
Oh yeah, that's natural. That's gonna make anybody uncomfortable, I think. But it still doesn't make it a non-interesting show.
No, I'll finish it out. I mean, it was like it came on before the you know, a lot of things came on before the regular shows and. You know, I am catching up with them in a hiatus. I saw third series or third year of The Magicians was on Netflix. So I'm going to watch that. You know, Doctor Who on Amazon. I'm subscribed to that. And I'm about three or four episodes in, and I'll probably finish that during the hiatus. You know, there are a lot of shows out there that, I'll watch during the hiatus. And like I said, there's between everything I'm subscribed to, there is more stuff than I could ever watch. But there, you know, what I'm subscribed to, there are things that, you know, I definitely want to see. So it's not like, yeah, I've got too much stuff. I'm going to drop this one because there's something on there I really want to see.
So you made the point earlier, and I'm going to try to make this quick because it's getting late and I need to hit the head and hit the bed. But you made the point earlier where you thought that Netflix was turning more into the slasher channel where they have mostly the horror stuff. What I was thinking about earlier, just like earlier today, was that Netflix was turning into the new Comedy Central, just because of the amount of comedians that they will back and they'll give comedy specials to, and the amount of comedy specials that they have out, and they're starting to dig out some of the older stuff too. Like, there's two of the older Tim Allen stand-ups. There's Sam Kinison on there now, and they're starting to dig out the old catalog stuff. They seem to be heading more into the comedy realm than they do really the horror.
That too, yeah, I have to agree. I would really like there was, you know, And there is kind of archive.org, but they can only go back to the 30s or whatever. But, you know, if somebody would do a channel with the old Westerns and war movies, I would be right there.
Yes, sir, Mr. Hughes.
Yeah, I was just watching a thing on Hughes the other day, and his latter years and, like, living in a theater.
Well, what was interesting was that he wanted to watch his war movies and whatnot, so he bought a TV station and had them broadcast after midnight.
Yeah, that was hilarious.
You know, you don't need a DVR if you can afford the entire station.
Yeah, we think of that as so strange today. You know, why not, you know, just buy the film reels, which, you know, the station would have had to have. Or send them over or whatever, but yeah, that's just great. And what we're talking about is Howard Hughes lived for a number of years. He was in Las Vegas, and he bought a local TV station, and he just wanted to watch old movies. So I told him, "Yeah, you will play these old movies while he sat around naked and unwashed for months at a time."
Yeah. Well, gentlemen, my get up and go is just about got up and went.
Well, once again, we have spun a long podcast from almost no content.
Well, when I did the New Year's thing, I was following in the footsteps of the master.
I'm not even going to ask because I am sure I will be embarrassed by the answer.
Yes, Master.
Well, Honky, would you like to play us out?
Yes. Hold on. I realized after I had shut everything, started shutting things down, that I don't have the script in front of me.
Surely you have it memorized.
You would think by now, right?
And don't call you Shirley. And I know I'm going to spend the next several hours watching the rest of the Young Justice podcast or shows that have been posted.
Yeah, it looks like only three of them so far.
I'm seeing six.
Oh, I thought the rest of them were coming out on the 11th and then the 15th and then et cetera, et cetera. Or 11th and 18th.
Well, I'll let you know on the next show.
Which our next recording date will be on January 18th, 2019, which I got to change in there because it's still set to 18. Our music is Downright provided by Klaatu and Broom. We would like to thank Delwyn for the use of his Mumble server and for a bot module in our IRC channel. All you have to do is type in .ns and it will give you the next show recording date. We'd also like to thank 000 Web Host for our web hosting. And finally, we'd like to give a special thanks to Kay Wisher, Father Finch, and Tony Bemis for their help and support over the years. I have been Honky Magoo. With me tonight is 5150.
So long, folks. Oh, did want to mention during the show, you know, clicking on the show, it says these certifications are only valid for 000 web host. They do our web hosting, so, you know, I think we're all okay going through that. You know, you may want to go in and tell Firefox that that's acknowledged and okay. Yeah, I wanted to bring it up on the show, but I forgot.
Yeah, and it's an odd thing that most of the website will be fine without it, but then there's occasionally when it all of a sudden come up with that error. I don't know. I don't know what exactly the problem is. It's in there somewhere. I just gotta look. But most of my, I think if you just go to linuxlogcast.com and just straight up, it shouldn't run into that error automatically. And most of the time when people come to our website, they're just looking for the RSS feed anyways, because I don't have anything else, any other content posted on there, really. Just the RSS feed and the shows. So I'm hoping it should be okay. But if anybody runs into any problem or they feel like there might be a problem, let me know and I will definitely dig into that further. But in the meantime, I'm probably not going to have time to go digging too much. Also with us tonight has been Joe.
Good night, everybody.
And Netminer, hanging in there.
Yes, good night, everybody. Take care. And I'll see you next time.
Yep, see you all next time. Yeah, so I don't know what the heck happened, but I was playing around with stuff and like I was doing other things on this computer. I downloaded the stuff for the HPR show that the recordings that Kevin Wisher did, and I go into Mumble. I went in through Mumble and I logged onto the server thinking everything was fine and dandy, and my mic wasn't working at all. Like I was in here listening to you guys talk, Netminer and Joe talk for a few minutes, and I queued up and just kind of, hey, what's going on, guys? And nothing for a while. I'm like, uh-oh, something's wrong here. So I had to crap my old headset for the moment. I have a USB headset that I had to back up one that I had.
Well, it doesn't sound like a headset. I haven't had any luck with headsets.
I love the headset better. Because I like the fact that I can move. I don't have to worry about where the mic is and where the mic is focused. I just have the thing that stuck to my head, and that's about it.
Huh. Do you know which model it is?
Which one? The one I'm using now, or the one that I was using before? Hold on, I'll take it off my head. It says it's SADES, SADES, model SA901.
Hold on, let me look that up. You said 901?
Yeah.
That's a pretty good looking headset.
Oh, it's pretty looking. I had used it for a while, but my old standby one was, I had gotten an old Turtle Beach Air Force X1 that I had been using for a long time. I had started using it because, I don't know, I started playing when there is one of the competitive video gaming platforms where you can go on and do like tournaments and stuff like that. I started doing a couple of those where I wasn't necessarily in the tournaments, but I was just challenging other people type of a thing. One of the things that the guy says, one of the guys said was, one of the things you need to get is a decent pair of headphones so you can, you know, actually tell where people are better and stuff like that. So I purchased a pair of headphones. Before, I just had one of those little things that looked like the USB headset things where you cram them into your ear and it's got the little mic sticking off the side of it.
Yeah, I know the ones you're talking about. No, because I've tried a couple of different ones, but the headsets, it's usually the 3.5mm gaming headsets that I've tried out, or my Sennheisers, but just never seem to get good audio quality from the mic. But you're saying the USB headsets get pretty good sound?
If I sound good, then yeah.
Okay.
I mean, the Turtle Beach was 3.5, but then had USB for power.
Hmm. Well, maybe one of these days I'll give it a try. Right now, I'm still enjoying this Snowball that I picked up.
And from what I can tell, Snowball has been a very popular brand.
I'll keep my eye out, because I also want to try and find a Yeti for a good price.
Yeah, a lot of people like those Yetis, too. So I want to thank everybody for coming down to the New Year's Eve show.
Yeah, I was coming off most of the day.
Well, I was a little late starting, but I finished it.
Well, as it happens, we were all in the channel about the same time part of the day.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little past New Year's Eastern Standard Time. Because I remember I was upstairs when it turned into New Year's, and I looked over, and my wife was pretty much asleep, so I went, well, I'm going to sneak on down and spend some time on here. And I've been making sure I kept myself awake, so I was just basically drinking coffee before that, and then when I came down here is when I started drinking. And, I mean, I was on till, about 3:30? Around 3:30, I think. And then just by that time, I knew that in about 2 hours at least, or an hour and a half, the kids, my daughter at least, would probably be getting up and running on and about trying to deal with my kids on only an hour and a half, 2 hours sleep is not an easy task.
Depends on how comfy your recliner is.
And it was pretty comfy, and I did take advantage of that. I think I took like several 5 minutes, a half hour naps here and there.
Yeah, my plan was to get on at the very beginning, which I did pretty much almost, and I was going to stay on till about, for about an hour of my time, maybe a little more. It turned out more like I think it's 11 o'clock my time, and maybe 10, and then I was going to go in the morning, and I planned to catch the rest of my evening sleep, so I went back to bed, and I either slept through or didn't set the alarm, and woke up the middle of the afternoon, and then it got to where there was stuff I had to get done that day, and didn't get on until fairly later that evening. I meant to be on a lot more during the day than I was. Then, like Honky, I think I lasted about 90 minutes later than you did. It got past California New Year's. I thought I was going to log off then, but I think it's more maybe an hour or so beyond that or more. And then went back to bed, set an alarm to catch just the end. And I figured, because I was actually restless during that time. I meant to be sleeping. I was up a couple times and had myself muted, but it didn't look like anybody was lit up in the channel. I don't know. Maybe if you're muted, you don't see that. But I figured, well, I'll jump back in and I'll talk to Honky while he shuts everything down. Ken was in there for a while at the time, talked to him, and then that, I think Netminer and I talked off and on for about the next 2 hours or so. So again, way past the time when I thought I was going to shut it down.
Yeah, around 7 o'clock I had checked on it, and it seemed like, I think Reg, you were in there, Reg was in there, and Ken was in there. I think Reg was talking.
Yeah, and Seb was back in there for a while.
Ugh.
Come on, he could...
That's okay. I spent a lot more time listening than I usually do. There was pretty good conversation going on without me needing to jump in.
Yeah, a lot of the times when I was on my phone, I would just listen. And I know Paul was on for a little while, and I think he's been on Penguin Scored. I think he's been on this show at least once, like when I first started coming over.
Yeah, I think I remember that.
I was trying to convince him to jump on this evening.
I guess the Tilts guys, other than Dan, never got on. He was with us right in the beginning, too, and they were talking on Tilts that, he was going to jump back in at noon Eastern, and then somebody was saying, oh, I thought it was 2 o'clock.
Yeah, I thought it was 2 o'clock, but I think it was the time difference. I was doing my calculations wrong.
I know they said 12 their time, so I was expecting to get, that was when I was going to jump back in, about 11 o'clock my time, and and that was about when I got out. But apparently Dan was the only one that jumped in. Then Joe and Joe and Rich and the rest of them.
I was on.
Well, that's true. Of course, you can't.
Right. And,
yeah. No, I talked to them on the show the other day, and evidently everybody else got busy and couldn't make it. But I still had fun.
Me too. I always seen
I
that
think
fun.
Everybody had fun.
Yeah, I didn't see any of the other Mintcast guys on there either. I'll have to check with them.
Well, I talked with Tony Hughes for a little while.
Oh, yeah, Tony was on. I talked with him for a little while too.
He was on when I was on my ride. Sorry, he was on when I was on my ride home from work. On my ride into work, I was trying to talk while drinking coffee and eating bagel while driving. And then on my way home, I was trying to eat my lunch while driving and talking.
Yeah, a little bit of distraction.
A little bit.
Early on, Ken and I had a good discussion about our favorite YouTube history channels.
Yeah, I think I caught part of that. Because I had asked if either of you guys listened to Hardcore History.
Yeah, I think everybody knows about Hardcore History. That, one of my favorites.
Yeah, I got it set up to automatically download. He's not putting out shows very often right now, though.
Well, he's probably got a day job he's got to do, and that's right. Learning that much. That takes a lot of sitting down and researching.
Right. Well, he was also talking about changing his model too and putting out the longer format shows. less often because of how he was going to do the shorter format shows. I don't remember all the details. I'll have to look it up again.
Is that the one with George Carlin's brother?
Surely that's not the case. I guess I've never looked into it.
Yeah,
the guy's name is Dan Carlin. Oh, go ahead.
I listen to the history guy a lot.
Yeah, we talked about him. He's one of us too.
Well, I guess he's put out a couple of shows that I've missed. Just looking at his page, did he change his RSS or something? Because I don't remember the Supernova in the East.
Yeah, I think I've got that one. Haven't listened to it. I mean, they're great if you're flying to a conference or something. Just put that on and listen to it.
Okay, I'll need to check my RSS for this one.
Yeah, I usually, no more than he puts out, I usually check about twice a year to see if there's anything new on there I haven't got. And usually it's long enough that or short enough the new stuff hasn't gone behind the paywall. Not that I shouldn't be supporting him. I do Patreon for some of the YouTube channel. I can't do every YouTube channel that I listen to, obviously, but especially some of the ones that YouTube itself has defunded recently. I'm trying to help support them. I guess there's a Wikipedia page. I'll post the Wikipedia page in the show notes. I didn't realize he had a Wikipedia page, but it says the discussion group I'm looking at says he's Dan Carlin, the son of Academy Award nominated actress Lynn Carlin and producer Ed Carlin. And neither of those seem to have any relationship to George.
Nope. They just both seem to have the last name. I don't know why I thought that they were related for some reason, or that he was his brother.
Well, Carlin is not a particularly unusual last name. And we also talked about the Great War. And I didn't come into that after it had been, until after it had been going a couple years, or more than a year at least. And if anybody doesn't know, that is... It started on 100 years since the start of World War One. On the anniversary of the beginning of World War One, or probably actually a few days before that, to talk about the setup. And I think almost 5 days a week, it goes on. This is what happened this day 100 years ago in the war, as if it almost as if it were happening that day. But of course, even like Ken and I discussed, even better in a news report, because the news was, of course, censored and biased by, which side was, doing the news reports. So we, a bit of history and hindsight and a lot of things that, you know, nobody would have known and would have been able to report on, you know, on the same day. So it's one thing we both agreed on, that you know, the Great War ought to just be its course, though I don't know, it'd probably take you 4 semesters to watch it all. You know, and it would be just fine if the, you know, if the professor just turned on a TV at the beginning of the room and left the room every day. Well, does anybody have any more stories they want to tell about the New Year's Eve show?
Besides the fact that I look forward to listening to all of it, no. I had fun doing it, participating.
I wonder how much talk time there actually is.
I don't know. I got about... Hold on, I can tell you how many chunks I have.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it more than usual because I missed a lot more of it than I usually do.
I want to say it's about 10 chunks. The first one I went through without Truncated Silence came to be about 3 hours. After I Truncated Silence, it came about to be maybe about 2. So maybe we usually get around like 20 hours or so.
Well, that's good.
So you don't concatenate the whole thing, then remove silence?
Well, so, like I said, I have Kay Wisher's recordings that I'm going through right now, and his recordings have it as they stopped every once in a while. So there's 10 separate recordings. And where did that get put?
Yeah, because nobody was in the channel this year and saying, okay, everybody shut up for a minute while we stop and restart the recording.
Right. And I was debating doing that when I got home from work, just real quickly popping on and starting and restopping it. And oh, well.
Well, I meant to do the whole thing, and then, of course, I don't know if it would the whole thing would have come out doing it all, you know, just leaving it go, but... then, you know, when people started saying they were having trouble understanding me, then I was getting out and jumping back in. So, of course, that broke the recording.
Were you having audio issues?
Well, everything most of the time sounded fine to me. Every once in a while, somebody, you know, and I get this once in a while. I keep hearing the last thing they said repeated, you know, 4 or 5 times. And then all of a sudden, you know, it comes back. I think that may have happened 4 times during the show, so that's probably glitching my connection.
All right, so we want to start the show soon. I unfortunately don't have a whole.
That's kind of why I asked.
I unfortunately don't have a whole lot of topics to talk about. I mean, I got the separate hard drive for this laptop, and now I got to work on making the separate hard drive, because I got one of those things where it's the you put a hard drive in a little caddy and you put the caddy in where the DVD ROM drive goes, and I have that set up where it's got so I got an SSD, and then I have that. I want to set that the 1 terabyte spinning disk drive, set that up as like the home directory, but I have a feeling I have to go remap some stuff out and feel like it's going to be a little bit more of a pain than I originally thought.
It depends. Is it a new setup? A completely new setup? Or are you modifying an old setup?
I've had it for maybe about a month or so.
Are you going to nuke and then do it?
No.
Okay, then. Well, even then, it's just a matter of symlink on your home drive. You might want to do a copy and paste first and then do the symlink. Okay. So that way everything points to the new hard drive.
Do you think that'll work? Because one of the things I found suggested, like finding the UUID of the drive and then mapping it out in FSTAB.
Well, I haven't ever tried that, but that might work too. I mean... You mount it onto the home folder? Yeah, that should work. Easy enough.
And that's kind of why I haven't done it yet, because it looks... when I start reading around some of the things, and that's like, that's what some of the suggestions were, I'm like, this is going to be a little bit of a while to do.
No, well, That would also be like really quick. I mean, one line in the F-stab and you're good to go. And then all you do is restart. Make sure you copy first.
Right.
But then you would have to look at your mounts and see what's mounted where to make sure that it actually worked. No, you wouldn't even have to do that. You just have to use your file browser and go to your home folder, navigate to your home folder, and see what the size is available. And that would tell you.
Right. So one of the weird thing is, after I did that, when I start the thing up, it shows both drives and says something about how RAID isn't set up. And then, like, beforehand, I think I had it set up so it was, like, booting off of the CD-ROM drive first. So then it went to the other drive. And then I just recently changed it, the BIOS, so it would boot the hard drive before the CD-ROM drive. And I think that solved it, but it's still every time I restart. You know, let me restart this machine and see... if I could explain it better.
In your BIOS, is there RAID options?
That's a good question. I don't know. I should check.
It's a laptop? That seems kind of weird that they would have RAID options built into the BIOS, but if it's coming up during boot, then I don't know.
Well, if there's hardware RAID, that would be in the BIOS, definitely.
Yeah, it just seems a little unusual for a laptop.
Rapid storage technology, RAID, it just went too fast.
So yeah, I haven't really done much with technology lately.
I finally hung those lights, the strip LED lights, but I don't think that falls into the category of Linux.
Well, my wife grabbed me some for Christmas, so I just set some of those up myself on my desk to give some backlighting to one of my screens.
So I got a cheap... pair of, well, it's just a cheap strip of it's like 16 feet of just white LED lights that have like a dimmer through it. And as I was talking on the New Year's show about how it's supposed to be where you peel it and it's supposed to be sticky on the side that's supposed to where the lights are, and I started peeling it and the opposite side was sticky, so I needed to find a way to mount these things. So we were talking around about it for a while, and what I wound up doing was those little plastic, like U-shaped things that you'd use to tack up like coax cable and stuff, where it's got two nails on the other side. I wound up getting a little baggie of those for like $5 and used that to tack it up around the desk here. Does a real nice job lighting up my my desk area, my workbench.
Have you thought about spray adhesive?
Yes, but it's...
very narrow. It's a little narrow for that. Well, there's still two-sided tape.
Right, but at the same time, I was kind of concerned about trying to do something like two-sided tape because... so the desk I have is kind of... so the main part of the desk was originally a desk, and then somebody like mounted a bunch of crap to it to make it into like a workbench type desk. And then when I took ownership of it, I took a lot of the workbench stuff off of it. So basically, it's kind of like the base of it is a desk, but there's like a bunch of like weird plywood stuff attached to it. And it's kind of not necessarily, you know, sanded and clean. So it's... I'm not sure how well double-sided tape is going to stick to this wood. That's why I think I'm just going to kind of stick with these nails. Because nails are going to stay. It's definitely not aesthetically pleasing, but it's very functional.
Yeah, I've tried... I've got the stick-on Velcro, and I use a dresser for my laptop stand. And on the back of it, I will mount the Velcro and various things. But the poly board that's back there just does a horrible job of holding the sticky-backed Velcro. I don't know if I need to scuff it up more or paint it to make it work better or what.
Hey, back off.
Did we ever actually start the show?
Nope. Aren't you hosting tonight?
No.
I guess that means it's my turn.
I did it last this time. One more thing before we start the show on the same topic. Joe, what you may find out, I've got like a bunch of my 8x10 photos hung on the wall, and I used the sticky back, picture hooks. And, just the little ones, they're about half an inch long and got a couple strips of tape on them. But, they don't last very long. I mean, they'll last about a year, and then the middle of the night you'll hear this big crash, and you come up and here's the picture frame all busted and glass on the floor and all that. If you go with the 3M ones, the whole, and I don't know what you're holding, wire or whatever, but if you're, those little ones be fine, maybe for what Honky is doing with the illuminated wire. But, if you're trying to hold up anything heavy, you really got to go with those, with the metal ones. They got the two long strips are about 2 inches right. long on the back.
Well, for the heavier stuff, I've been using the metal plumber's tape.
Yeah, that should probably do it.
Yeah. But the only thing that was holding up was I got one of the ThinkPad USB 3.0 port replicators. It's got...
Yeah, I've got things like that.
Yeah. Got two DVI outs on it.
I'll do things like power strips or whatever, but I usually use screws to hold them up because they're heavy. Okay, I'm ready to start.
SMLR 2.0 is the revamped Sunday Morning Linux Review with Tony Bemis, Mary Tomich, and Tom Lawrence. On even episodes, we cover distro fever and tech news. On the odd episodes will be fresh looks where we review a distro or software or tips and tricks. Live recordings are bi-weekly. Sunday morning on both Google Hangouts on air and audio only stream. Visit smlr.us for all the shows and the live recording schedule.
Oh my God, it's Hacker Public Radio. Hacker Public Radio is a daily podcast by the hacker community for the hacker community. If you're interested in technology, creative thinking, hacking, Linux, or any kind of computer, that kind of stuff, you should listen to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.com.
The Linux Link Tech Show. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Find us on the web at www.twlts.org or email us at techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC server, thelinuxlink.net/techshow. Join Pat, Alan, Link, and Joel. And don't forget the two Dans. They are so hot. I know, because I've kissed them both. And Flying Rich, he's a bloody drunko.
If you don't like a guest, you can get up your ass. Ain't no funny duddies that'll get back.